This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 23rd of January, 1958. The title of this lecture is Clearing Fields, Question and Answer Period. This tape is 31 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions. Please note, this tape begins abruptly as did the original master recording.
Yes?
On this subject of fields, could you very briefly go into the
it's just so the person can see his mock-ups. There is no other significance in getting rid of a field. The reason we get rid of a field is so somebody can see his mock-ups. That's all.
What if he can see them already?
In against the field?
Yeah.
Or on the other side of the field?
Anywhere.
Skip the field. It'll blow up. If he can really see them, but I don't see how you could call it then a field. I think you've avoided the definition.
Suppose all he sees is, he closes his eyes and sees the room around him, and present time environment, or he gets away from them. Finally, all he sees is this field.
Oh, that would not be a field, would it?
We're told to push him in.
Push what in?
The present time environment. If we look at the room, close our eyes and see the room with its wall, we're supposed to push them in.
Well, that would be handling a mock-up. I'm sorry if I'm invalidating anybody. But a field is black, invisible, red, is usually an obscuring thing and is considered a field only if it obscures mock-ups. Definition of field. Yes?
What about the case where...
You haven't heard anybody. You can mock up things and push them in till hell freezes over and everybody's all better for it. Excuse me, what is the question?
A creature can move out, make a perfectly nice mock-up. Moves into his body, he's affected with a field around the body. Would you let deal with the field, or would you just have him move out and carry on the next step?
Now, I'd tell him to mock up something that didn't cause a reaction on the meter. I would not move him out, move him in, or do anything with him at all. He'd have to figure out how he could mock up and see a mock-up. Do you understand that? And if he can't do it, he's got a field. You betcha.
It doesn't matter what happens, provided he can mock up and look at it.
That's correct, if he can actually see the mock-up.
The automaticity of mock-ups,
that has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
Yes?
Suppose you have a room slightly mixed up.
Yeah, well, a field is not a facsimile in the sense that it has form. A field doesn't have very much form. The most form you will find under this term field is maybe rockets passing by or occasional asteroids going flip or something of the sort. There's some motion in it of one kind or another. There's little dots or something like this that appear and disappear in it. You get the idea. Now, that is a field. It is not an articulated subject. You see?
Okay.
It's non-identifiable. It's a not-no. Your first reaction of a preacher when you ask him to look at a field is a very interesting one. It's always, I don't know what I'm looking at, or I'm looking at nothing.
Okay, well, suppose a preacher has a facsimile approximating present time.
You wouldn't handle it. You'd have nothing to do with it at all. It's a facsimile. Of course, a field is a facsimile.
Yeah.
But the funny part of it is that it's a specialized kind of facsimile, and a facsimile that has form still does not prevent the person from doing this one test. This is the only test that is used. Can he mock up something and see it? Now, you have to be a little careful at this point and beware of this one. The fellow says, yes, I can mock up something. If you say at this moment, well, all right, then do this and that with it, beware. You haven't asked this question. Can you see it? The fellow says, no, I get an idea that it's there. It's on the other side of this curtain, and so forth. You say, what curtain? And he says, this big black curtain that is always hanging here. Well, you ask him, is there any place you can put a facsimile so it isn't on the other side of this black curtain? And he'll digest that, maybe, and I've had this happen. He'll put it out to the side of this black curtain, you know. He said, yes, there is. All right. Let's get this null mock-up and get the show on the road and keep it from going away. You got the idea? Otherwise, you'll get the doggone case pretty involved. Got that? This is simpler than you think.
In that case, do we have a change of command on that field step? Because
there is no command on a field step.
Well, first thing you're asked is, close your eyes, what are you looking at?
All right.
Well, no, unless I put something there to look at, I'm not looking at anything.
Now, let's get this real clear. I knew I ought to take this up today. Not because I thought there was any involvement on it, because people always get involved with fields because they're a bunch of not know. You get the idea. Now, if a person can mock something up and see it, that is all we want him to do, and that is the only condition necessary to run, keep it from going away, and hold it still, and all the rest of it. Don't you see? So we're merely trying to establish that condition. We're not trying to do another blessed thing.
Good.
That's all. Do you understand? Therefore, the questions which you ask, should merely establish this thing. This is very easy to misunderstand because fields are a not-no mechanism. And every time you try to explain them or grasp the thing, you're liable to run into a not-no. You get the idea? Yes?
This point on badgering comes up here, too. Most preclears, if you ask them to make a mock-up, can you see it very simply? Let's say many of them will say, yeah, okay. Whereas if you say, do you really see it? How clearly do you see it? And you go on down that line, pretty soon they'll wonder whether they do see it.
Well, this is covered by the auditor's code. Do not invalidate, preclear. It's covered by the auditor's code. You can ask questions which are not invalidative, however. You say, where is it? And you see it real plainly, don't you? There's a positive side of it. And the fellow says, no, I don't, as a matter of fact. I just have an idea that it is there. And he'll give you the dope. You don't have to ask an invalidative type of question to establish this information. This is the touchiest part of clearing that we're on right this minute, and you'll be very, very happy to know that it is the one touchy part of clearing. There aren't eight more. The first touchy part of clearing is letting the process get the preclear under control. When you're no longer running the process, who the hell is controlling the preclear? Not you. So he's not under control, although he was apparently doing fine on SCS. He all of a sudden doesn't act when you tell him to act. When you start into mock-ups, don't you see? So you have to make up your mind to control a preclear directly. See? All right, that's the first hump. The second hump is when you get up to fields, do you get all involved with this? Do you start going appetite over tin cup with this? It requires judgment. It's a nice piece of judgment, too. It's a step that has to be taken with considerable care. And your whole mission in undertaking the step is just to get it so that you can run, mock up, null object, and keep it from going away. All right. Okay. As far as in the body, out of the body, so what? The body, inside the body is usually black. Yes?
So I thought that when the field is clear, means that as soon as these curtains, might call them invisible or gray. Yeah. They disappear, and the preclear starts to see things, objects, or scenes. Then that means it's clear that the field is clear. Then, But the preclear doesn't seem to be aware of what a clear field is. He doesn't know.
Well, you're not going to direct his attention to a field under what I've just told you. You're going to direct his attention to this fact. Can he mock up something and see it? You will find preclears quite startled. More than 50% of them, I'm sure, will be quite startled to find out that they can actually mock up something. This will be a new adventure to them. They possibly have never done this before. Never heard of it. Oh, yeah, well, it's like a dream, isn't it? You know, oh, yeah, well, I do this every once in a while. Yeah, I do this once in a while. I just happen to think. But I certainly never did it before this way. Yeah, I can put something out there and look at it. That's quite interesting. You'll run into this curiosa every now and then. And it wasn't field. Now, if you directed his attention to the field, you're liable to get into trouble. He's liable to go find a field and pull it in.
That's what we've been doing.
All right. Yes?
If he doesn't have his body there with his eyes shut, does that show that he's got a field?
No. Nothing to do with it. Body has nothing to do with this. Yes?
There's a possibility, isn't there, as I understand it, that when you get onto step six, 5 and 6, that for a while you could, for instance, start not getting your rock-ups again. That doesn't mean to say you go back to field, does it?
Hmm.
Thank you.
You just have him plug away at it.
Yeah.
They fade out, they go, they disappear. Very often, a wide-open case will be able to mock up a chair 8 times. And that's the end of chairs. Very curious, you know, the 9th chair just... Where the hell did the chair go? What's happened to this supply of chairs, don't you see? Well, you just keep him going. All of a sudden, you get some thin, creaky, spindly, knocked apart sort of thing, and that's a chair. Well, that's actually the first chair he mocked up, consciously. See? The rest of them, why, form was on automatic. Actually, he mocked up all the chairs. Don't get the idea anything else. But he didn't knowingly mock up all of the chairs. I had a pre-clear one. Let me give you this one, just on that one subject that you just asked. Pre-clear, I said, rather adventurously, a statement of this character. I said, now, did you mock that up? Meaning, have you performed the command? And the pre-clear took it the other way, that I had asked her whether she mocked it up. And she said, well, I'm sure that I must have. Because it's there. Oh. We were running a wide-open case. Got it? Total automatic. But she says, well, now, wait a minute. That doesn't make sense. Just because it appeared, I have to assume that I mocked it up, but I don't know that I did. Hey, what do you know? I don't know whether I'm mocking these things up or not. And this was just a cognition. You see that? I mean, it just fell into that category. I wasn't making an effort to establish this. You know, there was another theoretical road to clear. I've given you one other today, Waterloo Station, which is a theoretical road to clear. A long freight, but it is a road. There are probably many roads, but that one is nearer than the first one there was. You know what the first road to clear was? Just get confidence in being able to erase an engram. You get the Frankenstein effect, how it... just little by little, have the guy take a lock, just as he came, the picture of the scenery, just as he came in the door, and get him to erase it. And get a sound that he heard that same day, and get him to erase that sound. This is the way I used to work with him. I was working with him on a reverse Frankenstein effect. And they would get better and better and better. This was 1947. But look, we didn't know tremendous quantities of technology, don't you see? There was a vast panorama, believe me, the total unknowns. And so to know what you were doing right was almost impossible. Here's an old gag about teaching metaphysics. There was a professor, he was a very, very good professor, and he knew his metaphysics cold, and he had a young student, and the young student would come in every morning to get his lessons in metaphysics. Well, the professor had a cat, and the first thing that the professor would do as he walked in the room, the study, you see, to begin the lessons, is tie the cat to the bedpost, you see, so the cat wouldn't run around and disturb people. Then he'd sit down and he'd give the lessons. Well, years went on, and the young neophyte was now the old doctor. You see, he had now graduated into that status, and he starts to teach a young neophyte on the subject of metaphysics. So he says, begins the first lesson. The first thing we do is tie a cat to the bedpost.
Usually that if you ran step 5 of SOP 5 long enough, it would result in clear.
Very probably. There are probably several roots of this character. We have this other route is simply copy, 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 copy. Remember the old root one step? Well, copy, 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 copy would naturally, eventually, take over the automaticity of taking facsimiles. So it's a theoretical road to clear. Copy, 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 copy. Get the idea? Yes?
How do you classify the Frankenstein when the Frankenstein doesn't deify the maker but somebody else?
Oh, yeah. That would be an interesting situation. It very often does. Very often does. I know there's many a poet who has gotten very, very deep into the world of poetry and gone almost mad on the subject, and all of his Frankentines deified somebody else. Most of the love poems you've got deified some dame. I mean, some lady.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.
What happened? What'd he do?
What happened to them now? I mean, are they still as they were? Or they...
My notebook on all this was stolen in the first foundation. And all their names and addresses and all the pertinent data in there must have been very, very valuable to somebody else, because they lifted it straight out of the files. And I don't have more than about a 2-year record on these people. And the record stopped actually in about 50. And at that time, these people were in action and still in motion and still doing beautifully. But because they didn't have a total grip on everything there was to know, I imagine some of them fell from grace eventually. You see, they possibly went on making this. But as far as action was concerned, to give you an idea, one of them was a lieutenant, first lieutenant, psychiatrist of all things. When heard of 2.5 years later, he was a lieutenant colonel at a base. Now, God knows what this fellow had done. I was utterly flabbergasted. I could not figure this out. They just don't jump people that fast in psychiatric promotions and that sort of thing unless they have done something fantastically brilliant or have got something on the commanding general in charge of... But this guy had gone up like a cockeyed rocket. And I only heard from him obliquely. Some fellow wandered into the foundation one day and said, "Well, I knew one of your former patients," he says. And he gave me the fellow's name, and I recognized the fellow. And he says, I said, "Well, where is he now?" And he says, "Well," he said, "out at Kingman." And I said, "Kingman? What's out at Kingman?" Oh, he said, "They got a hospital or something out there." And he said, "I was out at Kingman." And the fellow said, "Yes, he knew all about you and told me that I ought to go find you. And here I am." And I said, "Well, how is he doing?" "Oh, he's doing fine now. He's in charge of the medical depot or something there." And I said, "What? And what's a very small post?" "No," he says, "no, no." I said, "Well," he says, "he's a lieutenant colonel." I don't know. Maybe everybody had his wires crossed. I mean, maybe he was still a first lieutenant. But it is very unusual for something like this to happen, unless he simply just mocked himself up a commission. I mean, you see, it. Now, a lot of the material that came back about these people was just that random. But you must understand that all these people were a different breed of cat than we have now. They were simply people that were grabbed by the scrap of the neck, you know, and they were just sat down, and they didn't know anything about it. They thought I was a swami or something. They, by the way, did not know my name. I had an office there near La Brea and Sunset Boulevard and Hollywood Boulevard there in Hollywood. I had a beautiful rose garden out in the back of the thing, and I had an inch and a half thick oriental rug on the floor, and there were a couple of candles burning before the Joss house, you know. That's a fact. It was a very, very lovely office. There was no turban, but that was about the only omission. And these people would simply turn up. It was just word of mouth. That was all. There was no advertising or anything. And I was running it because I had gotten a hell of a slug of back pay, which paid for this research. I simply rented the place and unpacked my bags and dragged out all the stuff I'd had in the Orient, see? the only furnishings, and away we went. And boy, I had anything from movie stars to winos. And fantastic parade of people. And I just sat down with malice aforethought on a whole bunch of these people and just started clearing them up. They were there because there was something dreadfully wrong in their lives, you see. They did not know the word Dianetics. They didn't know Hubbard. They didn't know what I was doing. They had no clue, and they didn't know where they'd gotten to afterwards. There was no state called. Get the idea? There was nothing described what had happened for them. They couldn't have talked about it for words. When we were running the Los Angeles Foundation, a girl turned up down there, and she took a look, and she said, "So you're Hubbard, but you're you." He had the staff down there on its ear for a little while. I couldn't cope with her. Here was everybody starving for clears, and where are the clears, and let's take a look at a clear, and here one actually did walk in, talk to me, talk to them, and so forth. Never said a word about it, and walked out and disappeared. We had several like this, that they'd suddenly walk in and say, "Well, I knew you were going someplace. I knew you were going someplace." You say, "How are you getting along?" "Well, that's all fine. I'm general manager now, and everything's all right. But I knew you'd get someplace," and so forth. "Well, what's all this stuff in this book?" They're quite mystified. They had no background education at all. My attitude toward it was so casual, you see, so terribly casual, that they didn't know they were doing anything unusual. Therefore, it made a good, stable test. You see, there was no propaganda. I purposely connected nothing with this at all. Now, to accomplish the same feat years and years later is one of the more fantastic things, you see. I mean, this is actually the attainment of this state of clear and the attainment of Scientology and its goals and technology and all that sort of thing in this organization is probably one of the more fantastic stories that's happened around the last, I don't know how long, but it is pretty fantastic. Practically all of the early tests then were made on people who remained in total ignorance of any unusualness concerning it, you see. It was a very carefully conducted test series. They weren't ever told anything was going to happen. I've had a mystic suddenly sit up in the auditing chair and say, "I don't know what you're doing, but I have studied for many, many years in the hope of attaining the same state as I have achieved here in a few hours. What is this all about?" You see, big mystery. I never told him a thing. I just dropped the curtain on the whole thing. Well, now, that whole series of people and so forth, as I say, their names and addresses and everything else were looted in the first foundation. Well, I don't think I didn't tear that place up and down. I remember a couple of the people on staff said, "I didn't know you could get mad, you know." "Yeah, I didn't know you could get mad, you know." The whole idea of me was I was supposed to be a swami anyhow or something of the sort, and I was not supposed to have any emotions except serenity. Well, I'll clue you. You bait a redhead by taking his most vital records, you'll have to lose your head. No. The first foundation was at 42 Aberdeen Road, Elizabeth, New Jersey. Second foundation was at 276 Morris Avenue, or first foundation, main headquarters, 276 Morris Avenue, Elizabeth, New Jersey. The additional work of that particular activity was at 211 West Douglas, Wichita, Kansas. And the first Scientology organization was down on North Central, 1406, I think it was, North Central, Phoenix, Arizona. And that was 1405 and 6 we had at one time. And that was the first Scientology organization. That was Scientology. We had moved out of the fixation of the mind. It's very interesting, you know, that we moved out of the spirit into the field of the mind and back into the field of the spirit. Do you realize that? There's been a completed circle here. Yes?
You said something in round 53 that impressed me very much to the effect that it's perfectly all right to go around picking up engrams now that we know about them. And it seems to me you don't tell people that or something. I mean, it seems to me that a lot of people, they know about engrams and they're real worried they're going to pick up another.
Well, that's because they're not familiar with what they got. You get somebody who's run a few engrams, he stops wincing. Well, we've attacked this problem from so many different ways that it was an oddity to have on pure knowingness, unarticulated, a clearing process, which then, when it began to be articulated in questions, its anatomy looked over, became totally inarticulate, but awfully articulate, but not informative, and then move up into a field of articulation that was somewhat articulated, and then get up finally to a point where it's almost totally articulated and successful, you see, and to have a mechanical procedure which would free a thetan. Now that's the oddity you ought to be looking at. Well, I could probably turn around and invent a half a dozen other ways to make it clear, but believe me, this one has certainly been narrowed down. Matter of fact, the staff has been subjected to several bulletins over the past many, many weeks on their staff auditing, various ways of clearing. And I was sorting them on down, and I was being fair with them and issuing them what I knew as I knew it, you see. Just I was boiling down all information from all sources and research that had been done, you see, in the past many years. And it finally just all of a sudden narrowed down and just fixed on the exact processes you were doing. For instance, CCH 1, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, so forth. It's the most wonderful series of processes ever invented. The only trouble is their operating climate goes up and down with the sadness and the happiness and so forth of the auditor. Yeah. So therefore, it's not a stable series. We had to go clear back into 56 to get this SCS and connectedness that you're now running. It was run for months in London and in the U.S., here and out in the field and so forth, with spectacular results everywhere. We never did get anything but a gain with this process. We have to assume, then, that it's something an auditor can run. We also assume this, that it'll kill an auditor at first, running SCS, but that he will do it. See, it's something he will do. Most horrible thing to watch some of the people on staff. We grab somebody on staff that hasn't been up to this, and we start putting him through his paces to make him fit to be a staff auditor, you know, and my God, he almost kills himself running this SCS. He doesn't realize why he's getting sick and staggering and so forth. He's just running SCS. He's controlling a body other than his own. Total invasion of privacy. And all of a sudden, why, he gets in beautiful shape. You know, running SCS and connectedness is probably better for the auditor than the pre-clear, therapeutically. Quite remarkable. But it's the best, they're the best control processes there are. You know, this keep it from going away, hold it still, make it more solid. I got those factors isolated over in London a long time ago. But didn't have two or three other things. One was a definition. Where were we going? A definition of the goal. And the funny fact that you've had to have a definition, an absolute definition, and approach it part way in order to achieve mest clear. That's a principle all by itself that was established, you see. And there are a number of these odds and ends which have been isolated and established here, which have made this a fact. And you possibly now are maybe getting some tiny little dawning realization that you're actually into something that's beefy, you know, that there's beef behind what you're doing. But that's nothing compared to what it'll be. I've snuck up here with an H-bomb, that's for sure, in Scientology. It's going forward very casually, and I've suddenly started announcing clearing projects and come in and get cleared and that sort of thing. And there hasn't been very much hoopla about it, but as a matter of fact, if any part of this had arrived in 1952, it just would have been the damnedest thing that would ever happen. We're doing something on a very business-like basis now, which is about as spectacular as you can get. I don't think you could get much more spectacular than what we're doing right this minute. I'm not even trying to oversell you. I'm not given any big pitch to you about this. You'll find out. You'll find out here in the next 3-4 weeks.
You have anything worked up? Suppose somebody should accidentally get clear at the end of 30 hours. They got a lot more auditing coming. Then what happens?
Then we'll go for OT.
Good.
We
will?
Mm-hmm.
Same good. Way, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Just keep on going.
Same process. Just keep going.
It's the same process with this additional one. Now I think we'd better tackle a familiarity with the remaining 3 universes. I think when we finally get out there, we'll find that we are doing that. See? If there's just no point anymore in running a subjective, your 5, 6, 7 processes, just be no point at all, we have achieved an ultimate in those, why, then we would go around and start running them on this universe and run them on bodies out in the street. But we're into pure research when we go above that point. You know, we have not researched above that point. On purpose, I was perfectly happy to consolidate this gain before we went for broke. Okay, I've held you over time now. Thank you very much.